Hutchison interviewing Mrs. Claudette Lake on November 16th, 2007. So to start off, why don't you tell me a little bit about where you were born and what your family was like?
I was born in Hull, which is across the bridge from Ottawa in Quebec. I was brought up in Quebec, educated in French. And what else did you say?
What about your family?
Oh, my family. My family was French-Canadian. Large family, very family-oriented, as most French-Canadian families are, I think, in those days anyway. And I went to the convent, after that we moved to Quebec City, where my father worked. And my sister married an army officer, whose regiment was the 8th Hussars. And I was working at the time, and since they were then posted to Europe, and of course, in those days, this was 1959, I think, just the thought of going to Europe was really unbelievable. And I recall receiving a postcard from my sister from London, and she was in Trafalgar Square. And we were so impressed with all that. So I think it's at that point that I determined that I was going to go and visit her. And so I did. I decided, well, I either take a month off or I just quit this job, which I did, and went to visit her. And about 2 weeks into my visit, she introduced me to my husband. And so, since I wasn't working, there was really no reason to return after 1 month. And so I ended up spending 9 months there. That's how I came to know the military.
So aside from your sister marrying an army man, there was no military involvement in your family with your father or uncles or anything?
My father was one of these man who was born too late for the First War, and he was too old for the Second World War. But I had cousins who were in the military. I don't quite recall, you know, what unit they would be, because I was a child at the time. So, but that's the full involvement of mine. I didn't know at the time the difference between a sailor or, you know, or an officer or a soldier, or to me it was all the army for some reason, as we called them then, I guess.
So when you went to visit your sister, where was she living?
My sister and her husband had been posted in a small town called Hamer in Germany, and that was, I think, in northern Germany, and that's where the regiment was based. And of course, the men worked out of a base, and I'm trying to remember the name, but it was always Fort So and So, I think, but it's too far away now. But anyway, they worked there, and the wives lived in the military. This now you have to remember, it was in 1959. And the NATO troops had arrived for the first time in Germany in 1955. So that was 4 years after Germany was, you know, more or less invaded by foreign troops. And so they did not have many accommodations. I know that when you first arrived in Germany, my sister, for example, had no children. So at first they had to live on what we call the economy, meaning that they had to find themselves with the help of the base. There were officers who were housing officers, and they would help you, give you a list of the places that were available. And of course, it was a lot of the German people would rent, if they had a two-story house, would rent the second story for people like for the Canadians. And they were very happy because they could rent to us at a far greater price, because then our money, of course, was worth four times theirs, you see, which was a great benefit to us often. So they rented this second story of a very, quite a nice house. But the kitchen, it had been a small room that had been turned into a kitchen. And there was a two-burner stove, but there were no fridge. Fridge were really expensive at the time, you see. And so I recall my sister putting her milk on the, opening the window when it was colder and putting it on the shelf. And so that's how we talked. But you shopped every day. You know, the nature that the in Germany, in most of Europe, people seem to, there's always a little area in your neighborhood where you, at least there was there, and I think they'll still have that, where you go and do your shopping daily. So that thing causes a problem. Actually, we thought it was pretty much fun, that, you know. And but the one thing the Germans soon learned was that Canadians would not rent unless there was a proper bathroom with a bath, you see. And so they were, you know, they were very accommodating and very clever. They realized that if they would get more money, there was a very beautiful bathroom. So here we are on the second story. We go in the same door as the proprietor, and we have this huge bathroom that has this beautiful bath and two sinks, which is the most luxurious thing you've seen at that time, and a large living room, two bedrooms, and the kitchen that doesn't have a fridge. And so it was a very small inconvenience considering what we were getting, you know. Anyway, my sister, as I say, she had no children, and the man used to go away for 6 weeks in the summer on exercise. And so she convinced me, and so did my husband, that I shouldn't spend the summer there, you know. And so we traveled. Because we were alone, just the two of us, and it was a good time to live in Europe because you know, a dollar was worth so much more. So that's what we did during that summer.
So you got married to your husband while you were in Europe?
No. I waited. I went back after 9 months and waited till he came back to Canada, and that's when we were married.
Okay, and then he was posted to Europe.
No, he was posted then to New Brunswick, Fredericton, and we got married then. And then we went. Do you want me to tell you all the places we live now?
Absolutely.
Okay, so after that we went to Petawawa, mm-hmm. which is close to Ottawa. A population of about, the military population there would have been 2,500 people. And then we went to Borden for 6 months. On a course, and of course we had to live outside the base for 6 months. It wasn't worth taking up a married quarter that other people needed, you know, for 2-3 years. Then we went to Kingston. He was sent on what was this course they had to take in order to, you know, be promoted. And
is that officer training?
Some kind of like that, this which everybody wanted. That if you at the time, if you didn't go to Kingston, then you know you were not going to be go very far in the military. It was funny. Staff College, we called it. Mm-hmm. There it is, Staff College. And from Staff College, we were posted to Europe, and we went to a place called Zost, where the headquarters of the Home Brigade was, The camp, the base itself, was about 1,500 Canadians, and including the married quarters. And so by that time, I think he must have been a captain or a young man. He was a captain. And so we had two children then, and we were given a married quarter, and I'm not quite sure how it worked, but we ended up on the third floor in a two-bedroom married quarter, you see. And I recall that, you know, we were quite happy because when you were in a married quarter, you were close to all the services provided by the military. You had a nice big grocery store, a drug store, a theater, just all the things that a person would usually need. You know, it was provided and it was within the area of the married quarters, so you could walk to it to get everything you needed. You know, you could buy books, and you had a clinic for if you were sick, you just walk to the clinic, and so you could see a doctor. We just had everything necessary for daily life, you know. So being in married quarters was an advantage to us all. Of course, it wasn't always possible because they were limited and some people had to live again on the economy. But by that time, that was, I think, in 69, things had improved greatly, and it was, you know, I can't imagine everybody had an easy time of it. I know that, again, our husbands were away for all summer long, you see, and I'm certain that some of the younger wives who came there as new brides or, you know, with young babies and had to live on the economy must have found it more difficult. But I think the frame of mind at the time was that we were so happy to be in Europe that we overlooked the little things that were inconvenient at the time, you know. And also, I know that when we were in Europe, officers' wives, when the men went away, the commanding officer of our regiment, his wife would always, well, in my experience anyway, would get all the officers' wives together, and she would explain that some of our soldiers' wives were living outside the base, some of them couldn't drive, and so we were assigned certain people to go and visit and see if they needed help, and if they needed groceries, and if we could take them somewhere, you see. So, and if you went away during that period, we would give your closest friend your assignment, and she would do that, and then you would do it for her when she went away, you see. Because in the summertime, not all of us, actually probably very few, would go away, you know, for the summer with friends, but some of them did. So we tried to make the best and helped whoever needed the help. And there was always an officer that stayed behind. And if you were in trouble or if you needed something or you didn't have a car or your car, something you couldn't cope with, you phoned the base and he would send someone to help you. So it was a nice experience.
Yes. And how old were your children the second when you went
well,
back?
Well, when we went there, my oldest child was 3 years old. And my son was 9 months old. And the only disadvantage that I can recall to all this, our time in Germany, was that when we first went there, as I said, we were on the third floor, and of course in the basement was the laundry room. And of course I have a 9 months old, lots of diapers, but I will tell you later the advantage to counterpoint to that. So when I had to go and do the wash, I usually did it at night, if I could, you see. But if I had to do it in the daytime, it meant that I would take my basket of laundry in one side and my 9 month old on the other side and go down 4 stories to the basement to put the wash in. And then I would come back, come down with the next load, and then I had drying to do. And of course the drying, it was, because it rained all the time in Germany, so it was pointless to have to try and dry anything outside. So they had some lines, closed lines in the attic. So then I would come back with my basket and my child, and I would walk up 5 stories to hang the clothes. So needless to say, I planned, after a few times like that, I planned better and did it at night. But to come to that, the advantage was that there were Belgian troops there at the time, and they had, of course, their own French schools. And they welcomed the more Canadian children, English or Francophones, because at the time my daughter only spoke English, because we spoke English at home. And because the more students they had, the more money they were given, and the Belgian system said that you could put your child in school for the full day, and the only requirement was that the child be toilet trained. Yeah, I know, what is surprise. So our daughter, who was more than ready, at 3 years old, went to school every morning at 8 o'clock, and the bus, I put her on the bus stopped in front of our house, and my downstairs neighbor's daughter would come up and stay with my son, and I would take my daughter to the bus, and she would be gone until 11:30, then I'd go and pick her up, home for lunch till 2, then she'd go back from 2 to 4 at the age of 3. Isn't that something?
Wow.
Yes, and she, and only French was spoken. And so, of course, this little English girl doesn't know a word of French, but she was young enough, you know, that mm-hmm. after a while she thought that when you went to school, you spoke this language. When you came home, when I tried to speak French to her, she would say, no, mommy, speak English. And so home was English. And since we were in married quarters and everybody was in the military, she thought all the daddies were soldiers. Isn't that fun? Mm-hmm. The mind of a child at that age. Huh. She would never let me speak French to her, and I could never understand for the longest period. And then one time I met her teacher on the street, and then I was allowed to speak French to the teacher. So that was our you know, I have nothing but a very positive time, remembrance of our time in Germany. And the schools were good, and by dawn, we were there, I think, for 4 years almost. And so after being in French for 3 years, no, 2 years in French school, at the Belgium school, which is 3, 4, and 5, 3 years. Then she went on to, there was a French, a part of the school that had a French, there was one class in every grade for French students. And of course, most of our friends, all my friends were English at the time, and their children were also in the same school. So the school could not have been that large because the community was only 1,500. Yet you could get the best education, certainly as good as you got in Canada. So we were sad to leave Germany, but after the Zost, I can't recall where we went.
Was your husband only away during the summers while you were in Europe?
Not always, always, but the summers were a 6-week period when he was gone.
So was he ever gone for extended periods of time otherwise?
Oh, when in his career, yes, because when he was posted to with the UN to Syria at one point, and then he was gone for supposedly for 6 months. So therefore, any posting that was 6 months or less, the families did not go. And so we were living in Montreal at the time. I'm skipping, but jumping ahead there. And after 4 months, he said, you know, you're going to come and we'll pay for it. And so we did go to live in Syria for the posting. Eventually took, he stayed for 13 months, and we were there for 4 months with the family, and we came back because of schooling.
So usually when you were, when you were in Zost, he would be home sort of every night?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So in terms of the Cold War, were you very afraid for him?
Oh yes, all these things happened while we were, some of these things happened. Let me see now.
Oh sure, let me just pause this.
I'd like to mention that when we went overseas, we were also giving an allowance would bring our salary to the standard of living that we would have had we lived in Ottawa. And so that was another advantage of being in Europe sometimes. Now, when we later came back later, the allowance, the prices in Germany were so high, a dollar was low, theirs were, the mark was high, so it wasn't as beneficial. But every posting that is out of the country, if the cost of living there is lower than in Ottawa, you get an allowance that will bring you up to the standard of living in Ottawa. So, what was it you asked me that I'm looking at now?
If he was ever away, is that what we've been discussing?
Oh, yes, if they were away, Yes, but I'm trying
during
to...
the Cold War, was there also
the other reason they gave us is that allowance is when we're out of the country, we're not able to get in the housing market. And so we're at a great disadvantage there. You know, if you're only 4 years the way we were, and you come back, and price of houses has gone up, and you have not had, bought a house before, you need, you know, to be able to save money while you're in Europe, so that you can then. And that's part of the reason also that we get an allowance when you go out of the country. I don't think it's still done today. Repeat your question.
So in terms of the Cold War, what was your husband involved in? Like, what made you the most afraid for him?
Well, one thing I can recall is that, and I wasn't married to my husband at the time. I was just had gone back for a visit, and the Cuban crisis happened then, and it was about the time for his regiment to be repatriated to Canada after being there for 3 years, and some people had already had the movers come in, pack all their belongings to be shipped to Canada, and were waiting at home for perhaps the last day. Others hadn't gone to that stage. Others had already left. And then the Cuban crisis happened. And so the men had, of course, not left. The brigade had not left yet. So they were put on alert because we were the closest to where the war would start if Cuba and the United States came to that point. Remember they sent the boats to the ships to
the blockade,
if you recall, and there we were, day by day, not knowing whether our husbands were going to go to war. They were all prepared. They were making all the preparations, assuring them with all they would need in case of war. And they were on war alert, and so we, and of course we didn't. All we had was the radio. In those days, you didn't have a telephone in your house, or you certainly didn't have a TV. And so it was very, very worrying for that week, 10 days, that 14 days actually, that this went on. We held our breath because the whole brigade would have gone to war, and we would all have come back home. So they would all have sent the families back home without your husband, and your husband would have gone to war. So that was a very... very nerve-wracking. And the other thing is that when my husband was in the Middle East before I arrived there, that's when he was doing peacekeeping in Syria, I don't know if I mentioned, but the war in Lebanon started. And so that was a different kind of war, and so that was very dangerous. But I think NATO forces, or perhaps because of the contact he had made. He has a facility to, he's very inquisitive, and he seems to be very good with people. And so he was the only officer in Syria at the time who dealt with the Arab side and the Israeli side. Because if you were in one country, you did not go out to the other country. And I recall when we were going over, I was going over with the two children to join him. His instructions to me was do not let anyone put a seal in your passport. Whether you're going, refuse. Do not let them do that. Because if you went to Israel and you had an Arab stamp in your passport, it didn't work, and the other, and vice versa, see. So and then shortly after we were there, the war in Lebanon started, and that was very, very different. It was I wasn't comfortable, you know. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I was at the end of my stay there because we had been posted by then, and when my husband came back 3 months later, I had to go home and sell the house and get us prepared for the next move. So those two episodes stay in my mind because I recall. And not only that, while he was still in Syria before I arrived, there was an epidemic of cholera.
Mm-hmm.
and in Syria, and I had no news. We, you know, letters took a long time. He wouldn't be able to phone me perhaps once a month. And you read these headlines that there's an epidemic and your husband is there, and you can't, you're waiting for a letter, the letter arrives, but it was before the epidemic, so you don't know. And you can't phone him, he has to phone you, and he goes only when he's able to go to the Canadian, there was Canadian contingent in the desert there. And so it, I wouldn't want to relive those days.
So, after 4 years in Zost, you were posted back home, is that right?
Actually, at that time, we spent 2 years in Zost, mm-hmm. and then the brigade moved to Lahr, southern Germany. So that was lovely also, because the weather was better in Lahr. Then we went to Halifax, and I don't know what it worked in. We went to Halifax, and it was a two-year posting. We loved Halifax because the only disappointment was that we had become skiers by then in Europe. The skiing was fantastic. And we get to Halifax and we're prepared to ski for the winter. There was no snow that year. And then after 1 year in Halifax, he was sent to Ottawa on a French language course because he didn't speak French at the time. He's much, much better now. And so he had a lot of studying that year, I recall. Then we went to Montreal, and he was at headquarters in St. Hubert in Montreal. And we were there, I was there, I say 4 years, but we were there for 3 years. And that is when he went to Syria, and I stayed in Montreal because I was quite comfortable there, and the children were just, you know, to school, and we were established there. But as I said, after a while, we went over for several months just to be with him. And in Syria, aside from these things that happened, the Lebanon thing, I was very fortunate, and I hadn't realized, but Syria was a possession of France at one time. And so people of my generation had been educated in France, and I was able to find a bookstore where I could get all kinds of French books for the children, and they, you know, Tintin and all these, and of course the weather was so hot that you either stayed home in the afternoon or you went to the pool. You see, there was one pool in town where you had taken a membership, because try and keep two children occupied, you know, in that heat. But and there were a few merchants like that. The wonderful thing about Syria at the time, and I don't know that it would have changed, but if you are a woman with children, you are perfectly safe. And so I was never intimidated, never. And the men will stop and shake hands with your children and you. So I did really feel quite secure. And as long as you observe their customs, you know, you do not go with sleeveless t-shirts on and that sort of thing. But I just wore an ordinary t-shirt with a sleeve, you know, just to short sleeve, and it was fine. So, but I remember this book store where the proprietor, I think, was as happy to see me as I was to see him, because we could converse in French. After that, we went to Gagetown. There's a population of about 3,000 troops at the time. And we had 4 years in Gagetown. And my husband, you know, when he was promoted there and went from one job to another. And they were good years. I enjoyed Gagetown, yes. Fredericton is the capital, and we were about half an hour from and the children, one of the things there, because our children had been going to French school at the time. On the base in Gagetown, there was no French school. But since Fredericton was not so far, and there was a bus that transported all the Francophone children to the French school in Fredericton. So my daughter continued there in French, but I think in grade 8, my son said, Mom, I've you wanted me to go to French school so I could be bilingual. Well, now I can speak perfectly good French, in his opinion. So I would like to go to school on the base. And the reason for that, in a child's mind, because on the base, they all spoke English. So that didn't matter to him at the time, but they had a basketball team. So eventually we gave in. I mean, we didn't have an argument. He was bilingual, you know. So he continued in English, and my daughter stayed in French. It's almost as if I have an English child and a French child. And after that, we went to Sophie. And that was a different experience. The West was, we left, you see, when you are posted, you had a choice of your means of travel. And we decided that instead of flying there, we would take the train, because we had never been across the country in a train, you know. And so we took the train in Gagetown and transferred in Montreal. And I have to admit, the military was good to us, because we had a stateroom, and our daughter stayed behind because she had a job on the base. And so it was my husband and I and our son. And our son had this little one, you know, just one seat that becomes a bed at night. But it was this private little, what would you call it, little place on the train. Mm-hmm. And we had a comfortable, what is it called that they call it? A comfortable room there, you know. So that was a very nice experience. And I have to admit that, having been born in Quebec and Ontario, and lived in the Maritimes, we never lived on the prairies. And we had it really quite interesting, because we had decided that our children should see the rest of their country. And depending where we were posted, we would go out west and for a vacation. So anyway, we did it by train, which was lovely, and I was longing to see the prairies, and it was absolutely beautiful. To this day, I recall the colors of the prairies. You know, the grass would become cold, and the sky would touch the grass. Huge, immense skies. So we had there 2 years. He was the base commander at the bay at Sophie, and the difference there was that Sophie is a base that I think is 1,000 square feet by 1,000. It's 1,000 square feet. So it's huge. It's a huge, huge place. You could put almost part of England anyway into it. And so what in Suffield, it was a place where the British sent their armored troops. My husband was armored, the tank regiment. They sent their armored troops to train in Suffield, because the terrain was so immense that they could train, where in Europe, in England, there were no such places. And so there was a Canadian staff, and in the summer, when and a small British staff that were there permanently, and in the summer, this is every 6 weeks, there would be a rotation of troops to Suffield. Yes, so Alberta, I thought, was absolutely beautiful. The only problem was that in Suffield is 40 miles from Medicine Hat. And at the time, we only had one car, and our children were both of them were teenagers. So Friday, I couldn't count on the car on Friday. Friday, my daughter by then had her driver's license. And so the winters were something I've never experienced. I had never experienced before or since. At one point, the first winter we were there, which was more of a shock, as you well know, Sarah, the temperature was 40 below Fahrenheit, and it lasted about 2 weeks. And then there was a Chinook. And 2 weeks after the 40 below zero, when we wearing everything we own to go outside, then 2 weeks later I'm outside in just a suit, because the Chinooks are there. So it was really, the winters I found were hard. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, the summers were absolutely glorious. Yes, but And of course, the children had to go to school. Of course, they were both in high school then, in Medicine Hat, which kind of worried me a bit. But you know, they went mostly with the bus. Mm-hmm. They had a bus to, you know, to take students there, because there were three high schools in Medicine Hat, and not all the children, the high school students, went to the same school. So, but aside from that, you know, it was. I found at times that the prairies made me feel lonesome mm-hmm. for more people around me. You know, but there's no denying how beautiful it is and how friendly the people are. We still talk about the Alberta way, is that when the roads, you're behind someone on the road, they will go to the side of the road to let you pass. They're wonderful like that. They, you know, they should tell all of Canada how polite and friendly they are. And of course, we would always wave, or anyone would wave after you've let them pass. And so we. Our family called that the Alberta Way. okay, then we went to Ottawa. What did we do now? Oh, yes. We had been posted to Egypt, where my husband was going to be an attaché. And when we had to go to language school, and so for 1 year we studied Arabic. And that was very interesting. It was very difficult, but and I think we probably could have had a better teacher. But I found it interesting in that I had difficulty with the pronunciation, mm-hmm. whereas I found it much more pleasant and easier to read the Arabic alphabet, which of course today I would not remember at all. But where my husband had more facility with the spoken word than I did. And I think it's because it's a guttural language, and you know, from German and English, he had this sound that I couldn't make. And he found it interesting and difficult also. But as we finished the course, our posting was changed, so we never went to Egypt. Instead, we were sent we were posted to Belgium, but before that we were sent to Rome for 6 months, and well, actually we stayed 7 months. We stretched it out as long as we could. It was the most wonderful posting we have ever had, and if I were rich, I would go and buy myself an apartment in Rome today. Plus the fact that it was very instructive. You know, I mean, there were so many things to see, so many things to do. And I made a very good friend there. And every morning we would meet at the bus and take the bus and then transfer to a streetcar and go to downtown, as we called it in our Canadian way, where we'd meet at the Piazza Navona or someplace, you know. And we would spend our days sightseeing, shopping. It was really wonderful because, of course, the children were not with us. Not that that was wonderful, we missed them. But this was a 6 month course, and of course, most families, but all the children came in the summertime, you know, when we were. And so our two children, of course, would never have missed a chance, even if one was in university and the other in boarding school. They would not have missed the chance to spend some time in Rome. So their March break, they came, and you know, the military paid for that to reunite the families. So I thought, all the time we lived in Europe when our children were in Canada, when they were in high school or boarding school, Christmas, I recall Christmas, I'm not sure about Easter, but whenever they had a 2 or 3 week holiday, they would fly. In those days also the military had planes, you know, so they would fly on these planes. Otherwise, if they could not get, if there were no room because their priority was the military people, then they would pay for their fare to Europe. So that was lovely. And my children just adored Rome. So that was a big, so we were there 6 months. And of course, then we were due to go to Belgium, but there was a month in between that we supposedly would have been on holiday, so we chose to stay in Rome for an extra month. And then we went to Belgium, which again was absolutely wonderful. My husband was the head of the Canadian contingent there, and it was only, there were only about 200 Canadians there, because that was with NATO. And so the thing was, it was a representative position. You know, my husband was the Canadian person representing Canada at NATO, and the 16 nations of NATO, you see. And so we had a very nice house that I think I'm telling you all the things that you might have had questions about then. So we had to entertain frequently, but again, we had help. You know, the government allowed for those things because you simply could not afford to do it without help. You have 16 nations, and everyone, it's understood that you will entertain every single one of these people, and then you have frequent visitors and Canadians who will come, you know, from some kind of business with them. And so you would have to entertain them, and also the, you know, you'd have English representatives also. My goodness, we had, we'd often, there was the wives, all the NATO wives would get together once a month. And the 16 nations, one nation every year, or was it twice a year, would, the ladies would put on a lunch, which when you invited everyone in Brussels, well, that is the diplomatic side of it, we were on the military side of it as representatives of Canada, then you would have to organize a lunch for 300 ladies. And that was my job as the, so, but of course I didn't do it alone. The wives were so good about it, and everyone really enjoyed it. And you, the theme was always to do something that represented your country. And I recall we did too, but I remember the first one we did, which I was a bit nervous about, but was due in November. And so we, you wonder what the theme was going to be, but we were so fortunate. We said, you know, our Christmases in Canada are quite different than anyone else, because you had also to, you usually had a little gift for every person. You also had an area where you could sell things that were representative of Canada. And so we made Christmas decorations, and the other ones were really, really surprising. It's amazing the talent you have there, you know. And we would invite the ambassadors from Brussels. And, that was one thing that was very agreeable, and the wives enjoyed too, you know. And so that was, took about, you know, you finished one practically and thinking about the next one. And, well, we did a lot of entertainment, and his title was National Military Representative, you see, so we attended a lot of parades that we went to. The Belges were really very good about inviting us to things that had meaning for them. You know, whenever November came, or the end of the war, because Canada liberated both Belgium after both world wars, you know, as you well know. And so, especially if you spoke French, it was very, very interesting. I remember going to the market. Every Belgian town has a marketplace in the center of town where normally the city hall and the tourist bureau and all that, there is a square. Every day, I don't think there, I've ever seen, if you go to Brussels, you see the square, the main square. So that happens in every little hamlet or town in Belgium. And it is a meeting place, and every, twice a week, there's a big market, and the flowers out of this world, up there, it's magnificent. They do everything from selling meat to flowers to, and I recall one time, looking around and seeing a pair of these big heavy socks that had been hand-knitted, and I thought, oh, that would be good for my husband. So in French, I say, could I please have two pairs of this size? And of course, they recognized my accent. You know, they knew I wasn't Belge. And so the chap said, oh, madame, you know, where are you from? You must be a Canadian. I said, yes. Oh, we love the Canadians. They liberated us. So they never forgot, you know. And anyway, give me the best socks we have for this lady. But the Belges were wonderful about being grateful still to us. And we learned that every year at that time, at the November the 11th, they would, all the school children would go to the cemeteries to honor the Canadian soldiers. So it's very touching, you know. Yeah. And we really enjoyed Europe. We were there 6 years and then we retired, you see. So I think I've told you just about everything, unless you have some questions.
A few more questions. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about the entertaining that you had to do. Did anyone tell you what your duties were? Did anyone sit you down and explain how many tees you had to throw?
There was a protocol that your predecessor usually briefed you on. Mm-hmm. And, you knew, for example, that the first thing you do is make sure that you invite every representative and their wives. And the dinner parties were not always very big. It usually was 10 people, because that gave you a chance to know them better, mm-hmm. and you can sit down. 10 people better than 12, you know, man, wife, and that sort of thing. So you knew when you're in a representative position, you're representing Canada, so you knew that you had to entertain the community, and we had also to entertain Canadians. We did not have to. We chose to entertain our Canadian people because, you know, they were part of us, of all the, you know, and we liked that, you know.